I want to throw something out to you which is almost basic. And but it's not. It's actually quite profound, in as much as I feel that God has been really shining his floodlight on this in my life. Could we shut the door for us, please, so those folks are just...
National director of Ignore That Noise Call, along with the other one,
is psychic. You can open it again if it's quieting down. No, not on. It's fine. I've called it Jesus More Than a Decision. Okay, I'm going to, rather than explaining how it's all about, let me just take you to it. I love watching things in 3D. And it's not everybody's cup of tea, but I really, really enjoy 3D TV and 3D films. And I went to see this film, actually this time last year, is when I was at the conference and I took Tim, the guy that I brought down. We went to see Tintin of all films, and really intelligent, stimulating stuff. And so it was Tintin on the big screen in 3D, and it was brilliant. It was so well done as a 3D film. It was one of the best 3D films I've seen. And I came away from 3D film, and I thought, you know, I love 3D films, and I use the phrase because it's not... Oh, quick, this is sharp now. It's not two-dimensional. Yeah. Are you with me? Do you want me to say that again for those of you taking notes? Okay. It's not two-dimensional. It somehow seems a bit flat. It's three-dimensional, and it kind of feels that it becomes part of you, and that you're kind of in it. Does that make sense? And so hold that thought for a minute. And then I've been reading. Some of you will have read this. It's a book by Thomas A Kempis, who's a monk actually, and he's written a book that is probably one of the... I don't know, probably one of the most well-read kind of devotional, Christian devotional books. It's absolutely fascinating what he talks about. And I found it hugely stimulating to the point where I actually bought 30 and give them away to my friends, because I found it really, really incredible. And... no. Yeah, yeah. There's a reason why I didn't get one, Martin. So... I couldn't follow you on your motorbike. So I read this book, and it was recommended to me. And those of you who are at Sunday school or have done kids stuff, which is quite a lot of you, I don't know if you've ever sung or remember singing that old chorus where it's the way, the truth, and the light. Got the notes, haven't you, mate? I thought, mate, you were moving in the spirit then. That's fantastic. Do you remember that? I am the way, the truth, and the life. That's what Jesus said. Up together now. I am the way, the truth, and the life. That's what Jesus said. Without the way, there is no going. Without the truth, there is no. Just receive, Steve. Without the life, there is no living all the world. Hey! I am the way, the truth, and the life. That's what Jesus said. Does that mean something for you? Absolutely. So obviously, like, Jesus coined the original phrase, didn't he? John chapter 14, verse 6, I am the way, the truth, and life. No one comes to the Father but by me. But what Thomas A Kempis talked about, and this really grabbed me. If you think about a decision verse, okay, and we think a lot, don't we, about decision verses as evangelists. And rightly so, because we want to get people to make a decision, which I still believe in, giving people an opportunity to make a decision. Still passionately believe in that. And we've probably used John chapter 14, verse 6, many a time. And getting people to say, decide that Jesus is the way, he's the truth, he's the life. Make that decision, and rightly so. But what Thomas A Kempis talks about is the fact that actually we've limited the impact of that scripture to just simply a verse that talks about decision. Does that make sense? That actually, it's more than that. And this is what Thomas Kempis talks about in his book. He says that actually, and this is the song that we've just sung, comes from what he said in this book, which is basically that Jesus is the way to go, the truth to discover, and the life to live. This kind of sense of, it's not just, we don't just decide he's the way, we don't just decide he's the truth, we don't just decide he's the life, but we actually discover. So we make the decision, we discover what that means, and we stick with it for the duration. Does that make sense? So I'm pulling a few strands out and then kind of putting them back together, because there's a reason why I'm talking about these two different strands. So I watched this 3D film. I was watching this book, reading this book, and I suddenly felt God start to speak to me about how for many, many Christians, their Christianity is a bit two dimensional. It's a bit flat. Many of us have made a decision that Jesus is the way, the truth and life. Maybe some of us have begun to really discover what that means. But actually, we've discovered what it means up to a level. And actually, it's time to discover more fully what that means, and to stick with that journey of discovery for the duration. So I began to think about all these different things. And I really felt God say to me, Mark, I want you to preach around the country when you get the opportunities, whether it's to Christians who have been Christians a long time, whether it's a bunch of ministers or a bunch of evangelists, but I want you to preach around the country and call people to make a fresh decision about their faith. See, when you and I became Christians, many of us, we arrived and we made a decision. We didn't fully know what it meant to be a Christian. Correct? At that point, if I'm really honest, I became a Christian. I didn't really fully understand what it meant to repent, as we would call it now. I didn't fully understand what it meant that God had a plan for my life. Okay, I understood a bit about the cross and about the resurrection. I didn't fully understand what that meant. I didn't fully understand what it meant when Romans talks about adoption and being able to call him Father. I didn't fully understand. So we made a decision that we made, but we'd got limited discovery about that. And it was actually, the longer I've been a Christian, I don't know if I understand more, or I just realise I understand less, which is itself a good thing. Okay, but, you know, it's kind of like the longer you're a Christian. And that's why it's so crucial, isn't it? That with anything that God says to his folks, we have to decide, yeah, God said that to me. We have to discover what it means and to really begin to stick with it and to really begin to run with it. But for us as Christians, we make a decision. In meetings like this, yeah, this is you speaking. But we don't fully go on this journey to discover really what that means and what implications that has for us and how that affects us in our Christian life and in our ministry. And so therefore, we never really stick to it for the duration. And that's where we find time and time and time again, God has to kind of be bringing us back to these things. So that's kind of the background. Does that make sense? That's the background that I want to take you down over these next few moments. And I just simply want to throw out to you something that is a journey that God is taking me on. I'm speaking out of a personal experience, something that I'm reassigning. I'm up for reassigning. I like reassigning myself again to the cause. We don't have to. I work on the basis, let's not wait till we're millions of miles away in our faith to make a recommitment to God. When we get to that stage, we're in a bad way. Let's reassign ourselves daily, almost. Recommit, reaffirm our commitment to God. Our commitment to his call upon our lives on a daily basis. And so what I've been doing over recent months is been thanking God that Jesus is the way to go. I'm not just decided he's the way. I've decided I want to go on a greater journey, a greater discovery on what it actually meant when Jesus said, I am the way. What does that mean? A little bit of background for you. Some of you may know this, you may not know this, but it gives a bit of an inclination, or a bit of an insight into this phrase. So if I was in Bible times, okay, around where Jesus walked, and let's say I wanted to know how to get to the market, for example, and I'd speak to one of the people, and I'd say to them, how do I get to the market? And if I asked somebody in England in this time that, they would give me directions, yeah? Yeah, left, right, left over there, over the roundabout, T-junction, turn right. You understand, yeah? They'd give me a whole bunch of directions. In Bible times, and I don't know whether this is still the same today, so I'm not saying it is, but certainly in Bible times, if you were to ask that question to a Jewish person, they would say these words to you, I am the way. And what they do is they'd grab a hold of you by the hand and they would walk you to the place. So they would say, I am the way, grab a hold of you by the hand and take you to the market and say, here is the market. Now I love that thought, don't you? That when Jesus said he was the way, he wasn't just giving us a bunch of directions. He's actually saying, I want to grab a hold of you by the hand and take you there. Now, does that not encourage you a little bit more than giving you a batch of directions? Who's brushed their teeth today? Anybody? If you could turn to the person next to you and just substantiate that, that'd be really good. Okay. He does mean a different thing, doesn't he? Yeah, it's a fair point. My girls, Robin and Natalie. Okay, the place we are at the moment, alright, is they're brushing their teeth by themselves. But not because they think it's the best thing for them. They're brushing their teeth by themselves because we, mum and dad, think it's the best thing for them. Now we've come a long way. We've come a long way because a year ago, okay, they wouldn't brush their teeth. We thought it was the best thing for them, but they wouldn't brush their teeth by themselves. We would have to do it. I or Emma would brush their teeth for them. Okay, so we're doing really well. We're getting further along the journey. But the place that I want my girls to arrive in as soon as possible is that they brush their teeth for themselves because they think it's the best thing for them. Does that make sense? That's got to be the way that they go. And I'm just not convinced that as Christians, we're always going the way because we're convinced it's the best way for us. I'm not on about decision here. We've made the decision. I'm on about discovery. I'm on about duration. I'm on about really progressing. So the challenge I'm asking myself, and I hope you're big enough and humble enough to ask this yourselves, is how much has Mark Greenwood, forget about the fact that I preach the gospel to people, how much has Mark Greenwood really grown? Because he's not just decided Jesus is the way, he's made a discovery of what that really means, and I'm sticking with it for the long term. Not just the discovery I made 5 years ago, but the discovery I made yesterday. When did you last experience God doing something for you? When did you last meet with God and hear something from God that changed you as a Christian? Not you as an evangelist, not you as a minister. When did you take a significant step forward in your own spiritual life as a Christian? When did you tap into some resource of God? When did you last experience his reality and his presence in some way? Or is it a few years ago since that happened? It's easy. I was so grabbed by what Eric talked. I think it was Eric who talked about, the good news about trading in it rather than living in it. God, that cut me to the quick. I tell you, did anybody else impacted by that. For those of you who weren't here, one of the things Eric talked about was basically like, as the good news becomes something that we just trade in rather than something that we live in. And that really got me, because a big thing on my heart and mind at the moment is I've got to live this stuff. I've got to live this stuff. And it's so easy to be preaching that Jesus is the way, but actually what we mean is a decision you need to make. Is your faith still really yours? Are you still following Jesus? Because you know he's the best thing for you, he's the right thing. And if so, what new discoveries have you made? What new journeys have you gone on? If we don't develop this, we're going to struggle in our spiritual life. I think we have to acknowledge in the church at the moment there's a decreasing confidence in this. You know that, don't you? In the church there is a decreasing confidence in Jesus being the way, the truth and the life. And not just the decision, but the discovery. Honestly, a decreasing confidence. And my prayer is, Lord Jesus, we need a fresh boost of confidence. We need a fresh boost of confidence in the gospel. And that it is the power of God. And I think we need to be aware of this. And that's why I want to encourage you folks. However long you've known Jesus, however long you've been a Christian, however long you've been in ministry, do you know what? Let's determine that every single day we want to discover something more of what it means to be on the way. And that it's not just going to be, forgive me for putting it this way, relegated to a decision I made on the 19th of June 1982. And it is something that we're daily experiencing. I love this great verse, Psalm 119, verse 32, that says, I run in the path of your commands, for you have set my heart free. Isn't that a great verse? I run in the path of your commands. Being in the way, following the way, is not restrictive. It enables us to live and to run because he set our heart free. So just remember that decision, discovery, duration thing all the time. 3D Christianity. It's really, really important. We can only take people to where we've been. If we've only understood Jesus being the way to this point, we can't take anybody beyond that. I think the biggest challenge for people like you and me is not making disciples, it's allowing somebody to make us a disciple. Are we still being made as disciples? Are you still growing? Let's just bring it down to brass tacks. My mum used to say, are you still growing as a Christian? I'm praying a lot at the moment. I'm saying, Lord, I don't want... And I think it was probably Dave mentioned it today. It's been a prayer of mine a lot recently. Lord, I don't want to be the same next week as I am today. I don't want today to be the same as I was last week. I want to be stronger. I want to love Jesus more. I want to have greater levels of expectancy, of faith. I want to be stronger in my devotion. I want to be more intimate in my devotion. I want to be discipled. So who's discipling you in the way? Who's helping you to move on from decision to discovery and to duration? Is there anybody that is discipling you? Because you know what? If we're supposed to make disciples, and as far as I understand, you don't arrive and get a certificate. Well, you do, it's called heaven. But, you know, until then, you don't arrive and say, oh, well done. You've become a disciple now. Well done. You don't have to do it anymore. You don't. We should keep being better disciples. The longer we've been on the way. So are you? Because this is all part of the spiritual life. I'm not about, do you know the scriptures more? I'm not about, do you know the reality of the scriptures more? I'm not about, do you know more about God? I'm about, do you know God more? What have you, just be honest, what have you and I tapped into and understood about God this past month? Surely there should be something if we're growing and developing. So, challenge for us, isn't it? So he's the way to go, he's the truth to discover. We did a little true or false quiz when I first arrived, so let's do another one. Well, you decide. If you think these statements are true, raise your hands in the air. Butterflies taste with their feet. If you think that's true, raise your hands in the air. Okay, hands down. If you don't think it's true, raise your hands in the air. If you're not sure, raise your hands in the air. If you really don't care, raise your hands in the air. A duck's quack doesn't echo, and nobody knows why. If it's true, raise your hand. Okay? In 10 minutes, a hurricane releases more energy than all of the world's nuclear weapons combined. If it's true, raise your hands. On average, 100 people choke to death on ballpoint pens every year. True, raise your... Yeah, that's definitely true. That's definitely true. On average, people fear spiders more than they do death. Raise your hand if it's true. Okay. Typewriter. Let me just explain what one of those is. Typewriter is the longest word that can be made using letters only on one row of the keyboard. You were up before that and finished, Gav. That's confidence, mate. Go is the shortest complete sentence in the English language. Put your hands if you think it's true. You go for that, yeah. If Barbie was life-sized... apparently, the answer, oh yeah. Yeah, yes. If Barbie were life-sized, her measurements would be 39, 23 and 33. She would stand 7 feet 2 inches tall. Gary, that's far too confident. Have you been doing the research, right? yeah, of course it is. And a crocodile cannot stick its tongue out. A crocodile cannot stick its tongue out. Okay, alright. Okay, so apparently, all of those statements are true. Apparently. Some of you are googling them as we speak, aren't you? I can see. I can spot a Google check when I see one, okay? Okay, so, why am I telling you that? A whole bunch of just random statements, really. And but in a sense, it doesn't really matter whether they are all true or not, because the point is, I'm making some statements which you have to decide if they're true or not. Okay. I am deeply concerned about the state of the church in this country. I'm deeply concerned about 20 to 35 year olds in the church in this country. Because I'm not convinced how many of them really, really are convinced by the truth of who Jesus is. And in the church we've got people, and it is becoming, you say it, I feel it, I'm not afraid to say it. But when the question's asked of me, in a university setting, is Jesus the only way? I feel more spiritual activity and pressure and oppression at that moment than I ever have done. And please, I still say it because I believe it 100%. I ain't going to shy away from it. But I tell you what, I think in the last 10 years, less than in the last 5 years, the church has become undermined. I don't think we're being persecuted. And it's like, wake up and smell the coffee, for goodness sake. We're not being persecuted. It's like, get a life. I'm not even convinced we're being altogether marginalised. I think we are being pressurised a bit. and it may well come into marginalisation. But I just, if I'm honest, I can't look at what my brothers and sisters are going through across the world and say that I'm being persecuted or even marginalised, because it's like, you're not, I'm not even fit to untie their sandals for what some of these Christians are going in across the world. I really am not. But there is a squeezing. There is a squeezing. And we, you and I, as evangelists who preaches the way, the truth and life, we need to get a greater sense of the truth of this than we ever, ever have done. Because if we don't, somebody once said, a belief is something you hold. A conviction is something that holds you. The church needs to go from a belief that Jesus is the way to a conviction that Jesus is the way. Because a conviction is something you cannot escape. It's something you cannot escape. And I want to pray for you, and I want you to pray for me, that we'll move away just from a belief that Jesus, and it's a strong belief, but that we'll move from a strong belief of Jesus being the truth to this all-consuming conviction that we cannot escape and don't want to escape. And I would encourage you in your spiritual life and in your spiritual journey to be praying and asking Jesus to give me a stronger conviction that you are the truth, because we're going to need it. We're going to need it. And that's the place where we need to get it. We have a church and generation that has lost its confidence in Jesus being the way, because it's lost its confidence in Jesus being the truth. I have this phrase that you can only stand up if you stand out. You can only stand up if you stand out. The problem with the church is we've stood up against a lot of things, but we've not been standing out. And so all we've been is we've just been an irritation. And the church has become known more for what it's against than what it's for. But when we stand out, then people will listen to the message that we have. Some truths are shocking to find out. Some truths are great to find out. I have a bottle here called Liquifilm. These are, they're drops, they're eye drops. They're lubricating eye drops. And I have to put these in about 7 or 8 times a day. Because I've got no tears in this eye. I blame it entirely on Emma, my wife. I pointed this out to her. I said, love, I've cried so many times with you, you've emptied the tears in one of my eyes. She doesn't quite see it from my perspective. But your eye produces 3 different types of tears, okay? It produces the tears that lubricate, and that's the ones that are not being produced. It produces the tears that you cry, and then it also produces fatty tears, which not many people know about. If ever you get a bit of dry eye late at night, just gently massage the top of your eye. Just gently, otherwise you'll produce a different kind of moisture, which is not helpful, okay? But just gently massage at the top, and you'll produce these fatty tears, which just help alleviate some of the dryness. So I've got to carry these. And for about a year and a half, my eye was just getting worse and worse and worse. And it got to the stage, it was so bad. My eye was, I mean, you've got to understand this, it was swollen, right? It was really swollen. It wouldn't stay up, and it was incredibly light sensitive. It still is quite light sensitive, to the point where I have to drive with sunglasses on, even if it's cloudy. You know when you get the glare, but it's not sunny, I have to drive with sunglasses on. So it was really bad, and it had almost closed by this point. So I went down to eye casualty. My casualty. I didn't realise the eye has its own casualty department. So I went down to eye casualty in Coventry Hospital. And this is no word of a lie. This is exactly as I tell it to you now. So I walked up. Remember, I'm going to eye casualty. And so I'm approaching eye casualty. And I'm approaching the eye casualty information desk. I know it's the eye casualty information desk because I followed the signs to eye casualty. I've arrived and the sign says this is eye casualty. It points me to the eye casualty information desk, to which I approach this desk, and above it, it simply says, this is the eye casualty information desk. So I feel fairly confident that I've arrived at the right place. You can understand my confidence. Call it misplaced if you will, but I was fairly confident. So I approached and I said to the lady, I said, I've got a problem. She said, which part of your body is it? I said to her, it's me leg. She said to me, we don't do legs here. I went, I know you do eyes. Yes, so why have you come with your bad leg? I said, this is a joke, love. She said, it's not very funny. I thought it was hilarious, mate. I was proper on one. I was thinking, comedy boy. I said, look, I've just found it a bit interesting that I've followed all these, and I went through, I won't bore you with the details again, I've followed all these and I've arrived and you've got this sign saying, this is eye casualty reception desk, and then you ask me which part of the body is it. Do you not find this funny? She still didn't find it funny. So, all right. So I said, all right, look, all right then. Let's start this relationship again. I said to her, right. She said, which part of your body is it? Right. You got to remember my eye. By now, my eye has got like a bacterial conjunctivitis type thing in it. It's really like, it's bad. It is proper bad, it's swollen, it's closed, it's red. I said to her, it's my eye. She said to me, which eye? I said, honestly, mate, this is no word of a lie. So it was this eye, so I went, this one? She looked at me, she went, your other one don't look so good either. Point, I thought, just leave it, just go straight to the point, explain what the situation was. Anyway, long story short, I'm telling you this story for two reasons. Number one, just have a break in proceedings, have a bit of a giggle, but also because that day I discovered a truth that was hard, that basically this eye was going to be potentially like this forever. There's nothing that they could do for it, because my eye isn't producing the tears that clean out your eye, and the reason we got it swollen is because of all the infection. But I found out another truth, that actually if we put these eye drops in about 7 or 8 times a day, the eye is going to get better. Okay, so that was a good truth to discover. So I acknowledge, right, there are some bad truths to discover and there are some really good truths to discover. Agreed? We're agreed on that, aren't we? I think our challenge is convincing people, A, who aren't Christians, that it's a good truth to discover that we need God. It's a good truth to discover that Jesus is the only way, the truth and the life, and that no one comes to the Father but by Him. And I think the next layer is we've somehow got to pray and ask God to help us to inspire and enthuse the church to remember again that the day they discovered the truth of who Jesus was and the truth of who they were, it was a bad discovery that they made, that they were, in words that we use, sinners and in their need of God. But it was a good truth they discovered at the same time. And I'm just not convinced the church is feeling that this decision of Jesus being the truth and discovering what that means is as good a truth. I'm just not convinced the church is feeling that. So part of what I feel God is wanting me to do is to call the church back to this fresh decision, fresh discovery, fresh sense of duration that He's the way, He's the truth, that 3D. Because if we don't have that, our faith's going to be static. It's going to be two-dimensional and it'll just happen in front of us. Does that make sense? Like a TV screen that's two-dimensional. I want my faith to grab me, don't you? I want to be in it and it in me, don't you? I want it to be alive and real and experiencing and connecting with it. I want it to envelop me. And I want to encourage you, as a bunch of evangelists who are going to be speaking about the truth, I want to encourage you today to say to God, God, I want to go. I want to make a new decision even today that you are the truth, but actually to discover what does that really mean, and to let it envelop me and let it enfold me, and to stick with that for the duration, to discover day by day by day. And you see what I'm saying? That's what I think God is saying to the church, and I think God is calling us to do. So determine in your spiritual journey with God, the spiritual life of the evangelist, be asking God more and more. Look, Leviticus 26:13, love this verse. I broke the bars of your yoke and enabled you to walk with your heads held high. Isn't that a great verse? Not arrogance, but just the right, I'm a Christian. I'm not ashamed, I'm a Christian. God loves me, I love God, I'm not ashamed, I'm a Christian. Is Jesus the way? Yes! He is the way. Is he the truth? Yes! He is the truth. And let's get off our aggressive way that we present this. It's a wonderful truth we've discovered, that he's the way. Not a condescending, arrogant thing that we've discovered. He's the way, the truth and the life. Third point, he's the life to live. The way to go, the truth to discover, the life to live. And as I said right at the beginning, I know this is kind of fairly basic stuff, but I just feel God's recalling me to reassign myself to this and asking the church to do so. And I think we're in a place in the church where this is the right thing to do. So he's the life to live. My English teacher, many, many years ago, obviously, because that wasn't been at school since then, but we'd come back off summer holidays, and in our English class, she wrote on the board, "I ain't had no fun all summer." And then she said underneath it, to the whole class, "Now how should I correct that?" Well, I stuck my hand up and shouted, "Get a hobby," because I felt... You saw it coming, didn't you, mate? Okay. I felt that's what she was wanting input on. But from what I understand, she was looking at the whole grammar of the situation rather than anything. Do you know what? I want to say to you, all right, we don't need God and something to make life work. We don't. We just need God. We just need God. He's all we need. And if the church needs to reassign itself to this way, to the decision, the discovery and the duration, if it needs to rediscover the truth and make a fresh decision and a discovery and the duration, the church, I think somebody needs to make a first-time commitment. Because I think we somehow forget that when Jesus said he was the life, he was the life. He's the only one that can give life, because life stems from him. And we preach about the quality and the quantity of life. We don't need Jesus and something else. We just need a stronger determination to live the Christ way. Of course, it doesn't mean that, you know, Pete has to give up his cycling, because, you know, it doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean we can't enjoy ourselves. It doesn't mean come out and be separate like the church has done for years and he's just kind of getting its act together. It just means that we realise doing life the God way, we've discovered that it was what it means. We made the decision. Yeah, we've made the decision. But have we discovered what it really means? Because most of us have bound ourselves in some kind of religiosity. And we actually don't know how to live life and to actually really do life and celebrate life. It's bizarre. I find this really surprising. For people who become a Christian who weren't brought up in it, before they became a Christian, they found it really easy to be friends with people that aren't Christians. Now they've become a Christian, it's like they've had something removed. And they now find it hard to become friends with people that aren't Christians. And I've asked, why is this? I think it's we've stopped doing life. We've stopped doing life the God way. And it's really interesting, because actually what I'm challenging the church to do, amongst a number of things at the moment, is just start doing life. See, what happened? We had a bunch of church, the way we did evangelical Christianity was come out and be separate. So we came out and be separate. And then we went through a stage in the church's life, and we're still in that, where we've realised that we've come out and be separate, we need to get back in. Right? But the problem is, we're now getting back in, because we realise we need to do that so we can evangelise. So we're now getting back in to evangelise. But that's now abusing friendships. Because we're not getting back in to get back in, we're getting back in. So I'm not really your friend, I just want to hit you with the gospel. And actually what I think is really, really crucial, and what I pray and what I'm experiencing God doing for me, is actually, do you know what, just do life. And the wonderful thing is, it happens. It happens. I've had some great... So I've been out running, alright, recently, been doing quite a bit of running, and I got to know this guy, who, to be quite honest with you, probably, if we didn't have running in common initially, I wouldn't have become a mate of his. But it's just happened. Okay? It's the same wherever you go in church. To be honest with you, most of the Christians I know, I probably wouldn't be their friend if we didn't have Jesus in common. It's true, isn't it? I mean, but that's fine. Jesus is what we've got in common and we become friends. So that's hunky-dory, that's fine. Because that's what friendship is. You find something that's in common and you let all the other stuff kind of dissipate, don't you? So I just try to live life. Oh God, Lord, I've been asking God, help us to remove this divide that there is in the church between these are my Christian friends, these are my non-Christian friends. Now I like to spend some time with my non-Christian friends, but I spend time with my Christian friends to give me energy to spend time with my non-Christian friends. I personally find it the other way around, don't you? I find by spending time with my non-Christian friends, it energises me to cope with the Christians, don't you? That's what I find, in truth. But let's remove this divide. Let's just live the life that God wants us to live. I honestly think we've got to rediscover what this is. Because I'm not convinced the life that I signed up for when I decided that Jesus was the way, the truth and the life is exactly what I'm living right now. I'm not convinced of it. You may be convinced of it, and if you are, please teach me, a wise one. I'm just not that convinced that what I'm living now is exactly what Jesus meant when he said I'm the life. I think I've kind of let things come in and let things confuse it. And just as I believe God's calling the church to make this fresh 3D thing about the way, the truth, I think God's calling the church to make this fresh 3D thing about the life. We don't need something else, we just need a stronger determination to live the Christ way. And we know it's not easy, we know it's challenging. Listen, it's better for me to be 11 stone than the 17 and a half stone that I was. Better for me. I know it's better for me, but flipping heck, is it hard? And I know it's better for me. It's better for me on all kinds of grounds. But goodness, is it a struggle? Is it hard? Of course it is. My mate said to me, he said, do you find it hard then with the whole food thing? I went, mate, you've known me for a long time. Do you think I'd have got that size if I found it easy? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It is hard. Some of you skinny people can't begin to understand, Roger, I'm looking at you, alright? Some of you, you can't begin to understand, of course, I'm only joking, alright? It is hard. It is hard. Okay, so living the Jesus life, I don't want to give you this impression that, you know, it's all very idealistic and therefore it really happens. What I'm saying is, I need to have a stronger determination to get to the Jesus life. And I'm not convinced we've got the strong determination that we ought to have. It ain't just going to fall, it's like, I wasn't a Christian. I became a Christian. Hey! It's all happening. No. There are certain principles that we need to put in place to ensure that this life stuff happens. But you can only message it effectively if you live it passionately. You can only message it effectively if you live it passionately. I'm drawing to a close. 1 Corinthians 9:24. All good athletes train hard. They do it for a gold medal that tarnishes. You're after one that's gold eternally. It's really grabbed by that verse. That's the message version of it. It says, all good athletes train hard, but they do it for a gold medal that tarnishes. And in context with the Olympics, I began to think, and one that they're not even definitely guaranteed they're going to get. You know, even the great Usain Bolt qualified third, I think it was, in the national championships for his home city. And how many times have you heard of stories like Derek Redmond, who was guaranteed a gold at the Olympics, and he didn't get it because something happened. So we, on the other hand, we don't train that hard because we're guaranteed it and it's going to last. When I first started running, I was really sore. honestly, really, really soft. My legs, the first time I did, my longest run that I've done is 10 miles. Man, that hurt. Not so much when I was doing it, right, but the following day, I visited a very emotional place I haven't visited for a long time. I said to my mate, I rang my mate up who's training for the Ironman. Have you heard of the Ironman competition? It's actually the one that was in Tembe, yeah, which is, I think, the hardest in the world or something. It's pretty mental. It's basically like 13, it's a marathon plus a massive cycle and a massive swim, basically. So my mate's training for it. So I rang up, I said, Kirk, I ache. It's really sore. I think I've done some damage. He said, yes. I went, do I need to go to the doctor's? Because it's really sore. He said, no, it's good damage. And I'm, no, I can't get my head around good damage. How can any kind of damage be good damage? He said, no, it's good damage. So what do you mean it's good damage? He says, well, your muscles have torn. I said, how can that be good damage? I've torn my muscles. He said to me, no, that's how you get stronger, through the tearing. And I thought to myself, I don't know whether I want to get stronger. I'm going to go through all this pain stuff. But apparently, I mean, Pete, you'll know more about this. Some of you guys that cycle, is actually the way your muscles grow and get strong is they tear. And then they get, the protein goes in there and repairs the muscles and it repairs them stronger. So this is the deal. If you and I want to get stronger, we have to go through some tearing. If we want to move on to the life that Jesus wants us to live, I think it's inevitable that we have to go through some tearing time. And I would argue that if you've not been through some tearing time, you've probably not progressed much in your life as a Christian. It's not an easy message to preach, is it? It's not like come to Jesus and you'll be torn. Oh, I'll sign up for that then. It's not something that immediately springs to life. But I do believe that actually part of the decision, the discovery and the duration is in these times when we understand more fully, we discover more fully what it means to be a disciple, to be a Jesus person. When we became Christians, it wasn't just that we could get forgiven. Wasn't that we could go to heaven. It's that we could begin to discover what all that means to know Jesus. And stick with it. And not just stick with what we learn, but stick with the wanting to keep learning. Hey, listen. You've listened amazingly well this afternoon. It's the graveyard shift. We've had a lot. We've had a full day. And I just really appreciate you hanging in there. But can we just pray, and Dawn, if you could just come and pick up the banjo. And I just want to have some time for this to settle. I'm not going to ask us to stand together or anything like that at this point. But let's just reflect. Don't apologise for bringing in what some ways is a simple message, isn't it? And yet it's actually the understanding, the application of it is actually quite profound and quite non-simple, if that makes sense. But I really, as I prayed and thought through a lot, and I have done, I've had half a dozen things that I just thought, Lord, is this what I need to speak on and pull together? And it's actually only in the last few days before I came away that I got a real sense of what God wanted me to bring. I can't just fill a seminar slot or a teaching slot. I hope that you guys don't just want to attend a well-constructed sermon, though we do our best, don't we? We want to be good communicators, and preaching to a bunch of communicators, you work hard on your communication, of course you do. You want to do that, and it's right that you do that. But I just pray and ask God to enable us all to somehow say, do you know, Lord, however long I've known you, and there'll be varying lengths of time that that's the case. But Lord, if I haven't discovered something about you and decided something about you and made a commitment to stick with it, but I haven't gone through that in the last couple of months even, then what am I learning? What am I progressing? How am I growing and developing and moving on as a Christian? What truths have been planted in my heart? What seeds? What growth is there? What new life is there? So we're going to sing in a few moments' time. Just let's just have some time of response, and not just about what I've said, though, maybe specifically, but just about whatever God's been speaking to you about and challenging you. And I hope you've got something from God these few days, Corky. Maybe.
The likelihood of the
survival of their church. Yeah. Maybe. I'm not saying no. I think there's a bit of both.
I think there's a bit of both. Yeah. Actually, I think
the church. Yeah. Okay. That's fine. But that's not what we're thinking about now. We're just reflecting for us to respond what we feel God said to us. I think it's a fair point you raise. But let's just consider what we feel God's said to us over the last few days. I want to encourage us to. I want to encourage us to move forward and to determine that in a month's time we'll be different to what we are today. Let's sing a brilliant old song, but it's such truth. Spirit of the Living God. It's the kind of the older one. We want God just to mould us and to break us and to shape us. So let me encourage you to use these words as a prayer.